Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell, and I'm with Ben Hunter, and we're sitting across from Matt Stanton, who's come in to talk about Funny Kid Stand-Up, which is the second book in the Funny Kid series. Welcome, Matt.
Thanks for having me. It's nice to be back.
Well, I'm a big fan of this series because the Purcell name appears in the books.
It does.
In the first book, I'm very much the bad girl, Abby Purcell. Which means a lot to me.
Excellent.
Because I've always wanted to be a bad guy. I mean, I've been a bad guy in life, but never really in fiction, you know?
Yeah.
And now that I've crossed over, it's a beautiful thing.
Excellent.
I'm thinking this is a good opportunity for us to talk about the series for those people who have yet to pick up Funny Kid.
Sure.
Talk about the first book and then sort of roll into, without spoilers, of course.
Yeah.
Roll into the second book, because although you have done extraordinarily well, there are still kids to conquer.
There are. So Funny Kid, so this is the second book, and we're doing them every 6 months. So we're really pumping them out, because kids read so fast when they love a book.
Yeah.
And that's really exciting to me, but it also puts a lot of pressure on, because I put my email address in the back of Funny Kid, and asking kids to send their reviews.
Really?
And they do, which is fantastic. I was up till 1 o'clock this morning replying to them. But often they include things like, "I got your book. It was fantastic. I read it tonight. When's the next one?" So, which is great. I mean, what's better than a kid keen to read a book?
Do you email back with a link to Booktopia? You should.
You've been involved in publishing for a long time, and you've been publishing other books. Why would you have such a rookie error and put your email address in the back of a book?
Oh, I love it. No, it's great. I have a second email address that I don't put in the back of the book. I think it's great, because what I'm trying to do is, I know from all of the school visits that I do, and also my experience as a kid, the opportunity to engage with an author and to connect with the person that created the book that you love was incredibly powerful and incredibly meaningful. And so I'm constantly looking for the ways to use technology to achieve that. So one of the things I do, for example, is at the moment I've got a YouTube channel. And whenever I do sessions in schools, we're never able to get to all of the questions that kids want to ask. So what I'm doing at the moment is a question a day on YouTube, so the kids can ask a question in the comments and I make a quick live YouTube video answering their question. And so we just do a question every day. So any ways that I can use technology to engage with kids, I mean, the books are for them. The books are for them, so I want to stay connected with them.
My nephew, Henry, who is very much a screen boy.
Yep.
My mother sent a photo of him lounging on the sofa in a bizarre position, reading Funny Kid, which was, you know, one of the first things that really got him down, and he loved it. He also loved the fact that Purcell was in it, but he just devoured it, absolutely devoured it.
And I'm getting emails like that all the time, and I wish I could explain just how good that feels when you get an email from a parent saying, my kid never reads, but they've just devoured this book, or they've just read it twice, or they've just made me read it. I got a really great email from a dad who'd just been on a long haul flight with his son, and they'd picked it up at the airport, and he was just so stoked, and it was the dad that emailed me, not the kid, to say, "Hey, I just wanted to say thanks." I mean, that's incredibly meaningful, and that's exactly why you do what you do.
You can't buy that. That's the best.
But that's gold, and children and everything, that's gold, Matt, gold. Job security for Ben and I, it's fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We've got future generations picking up books. That means Booktopia's going to be around for a long time. Thank you very much.
That's what drives me. That's what gets me up every morning.
Onboarding customers, we call that. Onboarding customers. Thank you.
So for the parents who are listening that are getting out their Visa cards and about to buy the series, we've got A Funny Kid for President.
Yes.
6 months ago. There's the first in the series.
Yep.
And now I've got Funny Kid Stand Up.
Yes.
So what's new for Funny Kid?
Okay, so the sort of the big story of Funny Kid is Max Wolbert. He's 11 years old. He goes to Red Hill Middle School, and he's not the best at anything. So there's kids in the class who are the smartest, that are the best looking, that are the best at sport, that are the tallest. He's not anything, and so like like many kids that I meet and how I felt at that age, you're kind of trying to work out where you fit and what your thing is. And he realizes the power of making your friends laugh and realizes that, hang on a minute, being the funny kid is actually a really cool feeling and being able to make your friends laugh. And so so the series of Funny Kid is about Max becoming the funny kid and learning to become the funny kid. And it sort of happens a bit accidentally in Funny Kid for President, as he's running for class president and trying to work out how to win that that election and beat his evil teacher. And in Funny Kid Stand Up, filled with confidence that he is now the funny kid, decides to go in the town talent quest doing a stand-up comedy routine. The only problem is he's somehow lost his funny. He's lost his ability to make people laugh.
Power.
Right, as he's entered into this talent quest. So,
I have a selfish interest in it. And Abby, what's Abby up to in book two?
So Abby is the smartest kid in the class. She knows it.
That's all Purcells are.
And
we know it. We not always are.
Well, she's determined to prove her genius to the world at every opportunity. So Abby has entered herself into the talent quest as well, because she loves nothing more than beating Max at things. So she's entered in as a magician. So she is she's wearing a top hat and a cape. And she's got some pretty impressive magic tricks. There's also there's another plot here in Funny Kid Stand Up, which is that Max's grandpa goes missing from the nursing home, from Red Hill Nursing Home, and Abby's mum is the town cop, is the Red Hill cop. So Abby fancies herself that because her mother is a police officer, that therefore she is obviously a police officer too. And so there's some fun adventures that they all get up to, trying to find Max's grandpa at the same time.
On a more professional note, how do you keep up with this? I mean, if you're going to do book every 6 months, and I'm squinting, I can't see any illustrated yet. The book is highly illustrated. You're doing the writing and the illustrations. That's a ton of work.
It is.
Because there's a lot of illustrations in your book.
Yeah. It's 200 plus pages, drawings on every page. And there are about 20,000 words. I'm really busy, but I love it. I mean, this is my dream job, and I can't think of anything better to be doing. I go into schools a lot. I meet these kids. They're really keen to read. I leave the schools. I go home. I work on books for them. That's what I do.
And when you do the school visits, are there anything? I mean, I don't want to suggest that you're mining school kids for ideas, but are there any things that happen at those schools where you go, gold, thank you, I'm taking that. What are the funniest things that have happened, or the strangest things that have happened in these school visits?
I'm...
You're watching.
I'm watching, yeah. Mostly because I want to... Like, you're road testing humour all the time too. Kids don't laugh politely. So you're constantly testing stuff and making sure you're staying in touch. I mean, we always do questions, which I think is the funniest part of the whole thing. And so you often get some curly questions, questions where you're asked to compare yourself to other authors based on who's smarter. I once got asked if I thought I was smarter than Andrew Daddo, or if he was smarter than me. And then you get asked how much money you make. You always get asked where you get your ideas from. Yeah, it's fun. I love that. And my sessions are highly interactive. Like, we create a character together. I'm really passionate about encouraging kids about not only the power of their imagination, but their imagination is fun to use. And so sort of trying to encourage them to create, not just to entertain themselves on their holidays or whatever, not just to use things that other people have created, whether that's books or games or movies or whatever, but to create themselves. And that is a form of entertainment too, to actually make something new.
And what sort of response? Is that something like, I never thought of that? Or is that something that they're sort of actively involved with at school?
Yeah, well, I think often because they're learning to write or to tell stories or to draw or whatever in a school context, often they associate creating things with work, with schoolwork. Yep. And so then you go home and you don't have to work. So you can just consume, you can just watch, you can just play a game, you can just read, you can just watch sport. And so I'm really passionate about trying to shift that out a little bit, because for me, growing up, creating stories, whether it's building Lego and turning that into a story, whether it's writing and drawing, whether it's I was designing ships that I was going to build, which of course I never built, but I would do 30 drawings of how I was going to create this cruise liner in my backyard. So it's a huge and powerful space, and I have no doubt that the time that I spent there as a kid has allowed me to grow that muscle, that creativity muscle, that means that I can do a job that I absolutely adore.
So you've had success with these junior novels. What age group? I mean, there are very bright, you know, 6-7 year olds who are going to pick this up and run with it. But I mean, they're fun just for an adult to pick up and read. So I mean, I'm assuming that some of these kids that are more reluctant readers can sort of 12, 13 can pick it up and sort of go with it. But you've also had a stellar career with your picture books. How do you, because you've got, there's actually three lines, isn't there? You've got this line, you've got the work you do with Tim Miller, the...
Dino Dump?
Yeah, Fart Monster.
Fart Monster
Spew.
Yeah.
And then you've got
all
the
bodily functions.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. And then you've got the work you do with your wife. This seems to be, a very subtle way using humour to get the same point to an older audience that you're using with the books you use to tease kids with the ones you do with your wife.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a conversation all the time about reluctant readers and about how to encourage kids to read and how to teach kids to love reading. And my basic approach is not every kid says they love to read, but every kid says they love to laugh.
Mm.
So let's start there.
Yeah.
So my goal principally with any of these books, whether they're picture books for young kids or whether moving into more of these sort of first sort of 8 to 12 year olds, is just give them a great time with the book. Like give them so sometimes that means a poop joke. Other sort of gross stuff, and sometimes it means really silly stuff. But all I'm trying to do is give them a really, really positive, fun experience with a book, because we know, the research shows us, that they will go from there and read other stuff. Yep. And that's great. I think they should read other stuff. I read other stuff. I don't read just funny stuff. So let's start there. Let's start with something that actually humour brings us all together. We all love to laugh. So let's start there.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I was at school and the association of reading, as you said earlier, was work. It's like, got to read a book. And you're combating that with associating with giggles.
Yes, absolutely.
The putting in their minds that there are other ways. Reading can do other things for you.
Yeah, and acknowledging that it's just part of the process. Like, I'm not trying to say that poop jokes with picture books is the sort of the beginning and end of where reading should happen, but it's part of it. For like what we do with all three series is we think really, really closely about who the books are for.
Mm-hmm.
And then we enter into their space. So I know the fact that the first line of Funny Kid for President, which is someone has pooped in the storeroom, right? I know that gets a laugh from like 90 to 95% of kids when I read that in classes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I also know that for a whole bunch of parents and a whole bunch of teachers, they kind of go, oh really? Like, but I don't care. As in my job is to create a book for these kids so that they have a great time with the book, and then they'll read other stuff.
The road to Tolstoy is definitely paved with funny kids, right? Because when I was growing up, reading was just such a bore, and I couldn't. So my parents were wise enough to sort of give me asterisks I sometimes look at the page and see how many words on it and go, oh God. But the pictures would get me through, and the story and the jokes would get me through. And I, as with Funny Kid, it's kind of associated reading
For me, it was the same. We've got, for me, it was Dave Pilkey's Captain Underpants, and then it was Harry Potter, and then suddenly I was reading Chekhov. The magic happens.
Yeah. Because you fall in love with the idea that a book can take you to another place, that it can open up a whole other world.
It and can then reward you, get, you.
Exactly. And then you get interested and you go exploring yourself. And we know, the other thing that the research shows us is that kids fall in love with reading when they start to choose their own books.
Yeah.
So you want them to have a really positive experience with a book so that they go looking. I feel like we've got to get in earlier than handing the child a book and saying, you must read this, and hoping that it magically turns
What these books do is they take away the mechanism. So the mechanism always was terrifying to me. I'd have to sit down and look at the words and turn them into a story, and that was the bit that got me. And so when you're enjoying a book, the mechanism disappears.
Yes.
That I'm reading words on a page.
Yeah.
It goes. And so it doesn't become difficult anymore, and so then you have greater access to everything. Because if you look at books on your parents' shelf as a young kid, and you think, well, I can read any of those. If I'm interested in them, I can pick up that one and that one, because that bit is gone out of the way. It's a hurdle you've just jumped. Have you ever had any pushback? You said that some teachers sort of roll their eyes at a poo joke on page one. Have you ever had any pushback with kids, with teachers and educators with, oh, this isn't really quite the stuff we want them to be reading, that kind of thing?
Yeah, sure. And look, I respect that. I mean, I think teachers set the tones in their classrooms and in their schools, and I respect that. And so all of my school sessions, for example, I check in with the school beforehand about how they feel about sort of bodily function humour and stuff like that. And my sessions can be done without that.
But it's much shorter.
Hi, I'm Matt Stanton. Thank you very much.
I mean, there's plenty of space in humour without the bodily functions, right? And I spent some time with kids talking about that too, that humour comes from the unexpected and the surprise, not just from the gross, and that you can be gross and not be funny at all. So there is something more going on there. But I think I'm totally fine that, like, these books are not for everybody, and we knew that, and we always knew that. Sometimes it makes me sad to have a conversation where you feel like the teacher or the parent is thinking about what their child should be reading, and that therefore they're trying to get them to read a certain kind of book. And I feel sad about that, because I feel like I know what that conversation looks like with the kid. It looks like, this is work.
Yeah.
And that's the fastest way to kill it.
Yeah, and back in my secondhand book days, I remember a woman bringing in a copy of Bum Face by Morris Gleitzman, saying that someone had given it to her and she wasn't going to let her children read such rubbish.
Yes.
And Bum Face is a gorgeous book. And, you know, it will attract people in, kids into it because of the title and the circumstance, but it has a wonderful message in it. Another one brought in Horrendous Henry, Horrid Henry.
Yeah.
And said, he's horrid. I'm going, it's on the front of the cover.
Yes.
how can you get that? The hardest one to sell was The Day My Bum Went Psycho.
Yes.
Yeah. I think it takes a degree of humility even to play with kids. So to play really well with kids, you've got to enter into their space.
Mm.
And as an adult, that often means embarrassing yourself in front of other adults. Mm. So I'll find this at a barbecue with friends. If I end up sort of playing with the kids, we end up they want to make fart jokes and poop jokes.
Mm.
And so suddenly one of them calls me a poo-poo bum-bum, right? Then the best thing you can do with that kid to have a great time,
perfectly seriously, and say, hello, I'm poo-poo bum-bum, how do you do?
No, to turn around and say, no, you're a poo-poo bum-bum.
Oh, right?
And so, ooh,
the classic.
and now suddenly in front of like your other parent friends, like, you've just entered into their, like, you've embarrassed yourself, but man, you've had a great connection with a kid all of a sudden, because they can't believe you just said that back to them.
Yeah, that's scandalous.
Yeah. So I'm taking that philosophy with the books, which means sometimes, you know, sometimes I'm embarrassed. Like, sometimes sometimes it's embarrassing in front of other adults, but that's not what I'm doing this for.
Yeah.
I'm doing this to connect with kids, and it's working, which is really fun.
Matt, thank you so much for coming in and talking about it. We love what you do, and we're proud supporters of your books here at Booktopia.
Thank you. I know that, and I appreciate it. Booktopia is amazing.
You can get all of Matt Stan's books, the ones he does with Tim Miller, with the fart and the spew and all that wonderful stuff, the ones he does with his wife, and then these wonderful Funny Kid books. And I really recommend them. If you're going on a long trip, throw both books in the back seat and let the kids be silent for a long time. It's fantastic. They're pure distraction, these books. Brilliant stuff. Thank you again, Matt.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.